Welcome to the Letters to Women podcast, where we explore and embrace what the feminine genius, this unique way of being and loving as women, and what that looks like practically in our own ordinary daily lives. Here you're going to find conversations with women in a variety of seasons of life and hear about how they are living out their own unique feminine genius. And these are not conversations that lay out the one perfect way to be a woman that leaves you feeling left out or out of place. Instead, these are conversations that are meant to encourage you to discover more about who the Lord has created you to be and how you are called to live out that feminine genius too. My name is Chloe Linger, and this is the sixth episode in the Letters to Mothers series. This season, we're exploring what it means to be a mother on a physical, a spiritual, and an emotional level. But what if you are longing for physical motherhood and spiritual motherhood feels like a consolation prize, like a second-rate motherhood? What if you're experiencing infertility, whether that's a season of infertility with the hope of a positive pregnancy test one day, or maybe that's a permanent infertility, and you're wondering if you have any space in conversations about the feminine genius and motherhood? Infertility is a burden that most women and couples don't expect to carry, and it can impact your marriage, your relationship with friends and family, and your relationship with God. And on top of that, infertility often feels like a lonely and long path. But you're not alone. Today, my guest and I are talking about dismantling the lies around infertility, the importance of community in this journey, and how to support your spouse as you carry that cross of infertility together. So, wherever you are on this path of infertility, if you are looking for a place of rest and solidarity and encouragement, this episode is for you. Today's episode of the Letters to Women podcast is sponsored by Rooted for Good. Rooted for Good handcrafts affordable, all-natural skincare, and they strive to be a brand that is rooted in goodness, truth, and real beauty. They believe that beauty is reflected in all shapes, sizes, ages, skin tones, and ethnicities, and they offer products to enhance your natural beauty and help you feel more confident. I spent years wondering about how to make the switch to an all-natural skincare routine, and I spent hours researching different options online. And often I ended up with analysis paralysis because everything just seemed so complicated. But Rooted for Good made the process simple with their skincare bundle that included everything that I needed for a natural skincare routine. Their Refresh Facial Toner has become my favorite skincare product that I use in the morning and at night. It's got witch hazel, distilled water, and therapeutic grade, frankincense, lavender, tea tree, and Lang Lang essential oils, and it smells great. Rooted for Good, it does an incredible job of not only telling you exactly what is in their products, but the why behind the ingredients that they chose to create those products, so you're really informed about what you're putting on your face and on your body. Not only is Rooted for Good good for you, it is good for others. They make all of their products in small batches without any preservatives, with all natural ingredients that are actually good for your skin. And then they donate 10% of their sales to good works that uplift others in developing countries. You can use the code LETTERS20 for 20% off your purchase at rootedforgood.com. Discover how they're making self-care simple. That's LETTERS20 for 20% off at checkout. Thank you to Rooted for Good for sponsoring this episode. Tonight, I'm welcoming Anne Koshut to the podcast. Anne is the co-founder of Springs in the Desert, a Catholic infertility ministry. She holds a Master of Theological Studies from the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies on Marriage and Family at the Catholic University of America. She and her husband, Keith, live in central Pennsylvania and are Byzantine Catholics who married in 2011. In addition to her work as an executive director of Springs in the Desert, she also writes and speaks at conferences, retreats, and pre-Cana programs. She's a regular columnist for the Eastern Catholic Life and a board member of the Catholic Family Life Association representing the Eastern Catholic Churches. And welcome to Letters to Women. It's so good to have you on the show.
It's so great to be here with you, Chloe. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. You know, I've been posting this podcast for years now, and you are the first Byzantine Catholic who I've hosted. And so I feel like we could have a whole nother podcast about Byzantine Catholicism and the beauty of that aspect of the church.
I'm sort of used to being the first or the only Byzantine Catholic in the room. So that's normal.
So in this episode together today, we're going to be talking about the experience of infertility and what to do if spiritual maternity can feel like a consolation prize, how infertility impacts marriages. But first, especially for listeners who are meeting you for the first time, Anne, can you tell me about your story as a Catholic woman?
Sure. So I am a cradle Byzantine Catholic. I am the youngest of two. I have an older brother, Father Frank, who is a Byzantine Catholic priest. He serves in one of our parishes in Fort Pierce, Florida. And, you know, I grew up in a small town in the coal regions of Northeast PA, close family, so grateful to our parents for really instilling good values in us, taking us to church from the time that we were babies, you know, making just the sort of domestic church. I mean, my parents wouldn't have called it a domestic church. They didn't really have that language. That wasn't kind of in use when I was a kid, but that's what they created. And so the traditions, the ethnic traditions were Slavic, you know, just all of the Catholic traditions. I grew up in that. And I'm so grateful for it because, like many young adults, sadly, I had my period of kind of drifting away and rebelling. And I really believe that it was because of that foundation that my parents instilled in me. And of course, they prayed for me, you know, all the time. And especially when I kind of wandered a little bit, that's what brought me back. And then that led to just an incredible metanoia experience that I had. And then inexplicably, the Holy Spirit called me to study theology. And here we are.
And you're the co-founder of Springs in the Desert, a ministry that accompanies those struggling with infertility by offering a place of respite and solidarity where they can know God's love for them and discover his unique call to fruitfulness. I would love to hear the story of how Springs in the Desert came to be.
Yeah, so my husband Keith and I married when we were a little bit later in life. We were in our early 40s. And so we kind of thought, well, you know, it might be a little bit harder to get pregnant than if we were younger. But of course, it's going to happen, right? Because we're doing it all the right way, all the things. And especially because, as I said, I'm the youngest of two. He is the youngest of 16.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Yes.
Yep.
And he's a twin. So, you know, we're sort of thinking, okay, like the fertility is on our side, at least, you know, at least to some degree, right? But, you know, there was no honeymoon baby. And then month after month were the negative pregnancy tests. And then it was sort of like, oh my gosh, maybe this isn't going to happen. And, you know, there was denial on my part there. I mean, a lot of emotions that I'm sure we'll get into as we go along. But during that time, I reconnected with a friend from grad school, Kimberly Henkel, whom I know that you've already met. And we were at a conference. And I remember that the keynote was talking about her experience of adopting her children. Kimberly opened up to me and said, we're having trouble conceiving, and I really think that we might be called to adoption. And that's the first time I talked to another woman who was also going through infertility, which was a very different experience from talking with my girlfriends or my mom or anyone else. And from there, we just, when I look back on it, I think we kind of created our own little support group just on the phone with each other, right? And that went on for a couple of years. And we just kept saying, there's no good pastoral support. The church has to do something. We just kept talking about it and saying that. And then she was asked to write an article about the experience of infertility and said, hey, why don't you write it with me? And through that process, it was kind of like we got clubbed over the head. And it was like, oh, maybe we are the ones who are supposed to do something. And that's how it happened. We are the most unlikely people to start a ministry. That was never in our plan. But now, of course, we see that it was in God's plan. So that's how Springs in the Desert was born.
Yeah, sometimes I think that the ministries that just bear so much incredible fruit are the ones that are the most unlikely, where you couldn't have planned it if you tried. It's the Holy Spirit at work. I think for a lot of women who are experiencing infertility, it can be tempting to believe so many lies. I am less than, or I do not belong as a woman because I'm not able to conceive or carry children. What does it look like to dismantle that lie and live out the feminine genius while experiencing infertility?
That is such an important question and an important point, and one that I think from the outside, when people look at infertility, it's not something that they consider. There are so many emotions that bombard us and so many thoughts. We feel sad. We feel jealous. We feel angry, confused, conflicted. Sometimes we feel like perhaps we're being abandoned by God. Maybe he's just simply indifferent to us. Maybe we are being punished. I mean, that's something that we hear a lot from women, just wondering if they're being punished. And so Those are certainly lies, as you said. It's hard to dismantle those lies, and you certainly can't do it on your own. I think, you know, you need this, you need a good support system, of course, you need prayer, but I think you need community. And I think you also need someone else to tell you that those are lies. That was my experience. You know, when Kimberly and I started talking with each other, and were expressing that we were having those emotions and having those thoughts about ourselves and our identity, that's when, like, when you speak it aloud to someone else, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, what is this? You know, when it's all up in your head, you know, you just sort of accept it. And so in our ministry, we try to emphasize this idea of placing all of those things, those emotions and those thoughts out on the table. Let's get them out into the open, and then we can begin to kind of deal with them. And as you say, to start to dismantle those lies and see them for what they are. And just to say also that for us in this ministry, language is so important. So for example, we will say struggling with infertility or carrying the cross of infertility. We don't use the word infertile. We don't say infertile woman or infertile couple, because that goes right to the heart of our identity. And so we like to emphasize the fact that infertility is a circumstance. It's not our identity. And I think that is part of this process of dismantling those lies, seeing them for what they are, and then really reframing them to what is true, to what God really believes and knows about us and sees in us.
Yes, yes. In our marriage, we had an experience of secondary infertility after a miscarriage early on in our marriage. And the lie that it's just, this is my fault. I'm just doing something wrong. If I can only figure out what I'm doing wrong, then we wouldn't have this experience. But when you live in your head and just play those over and over and over throughout the day, it just becomes so easy to believe that and to accept that as this is just who I am. I am just infertile. And so just to that language shift makes such a big difference in the way that we're framing this and we're entering into it from a mental in conversation with others too. How does infertility impact a marriage? Do you have advice for couples who are listening in who are experiencing infertility when it comes to communicating, processing all of the emotions that comes with this experience and the grief that can come with it as well?
Yeah, that is a big question, and there are so many layers to it. Infertility impacts every aspect of our life, our spiritual life, our emotional life, our other relationships, and of course, it impacts the marriage. And one of the important things that we need, I think, to understand in our marriage is that this is a shared cross. It's something that we carry together. And gosh, just thinking again about language, I'm recalling a time when early on in our marriage, and we're going through this experience, and we're visiting Keith's family, and a neighbor comes by and asks about children. Of course, that's a natural question. And whatever answer I had that day, whatever I could muster with whatever emotional state I was in. And she looked right at me and she said, oh, well, which one of you is the problem? And so, you know, I wanted to sink into the floor, and immediately I took that on as identity. My identity is problem or obstacle, right? And so that is really key in the marriage, is to not look at one or the other as the problem, but as a shared cross in our marriage. It's so mysterious, isn't it? You know, why this cross? But we could say that about any suffering that we have. Why this suffering, you know, and why us at this time? So important for couples to know that this is something that they share, that they married a person, not an ideal or an idea of what marriage would be like. Of course, we have hopes and dreams and expectations, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we always have to come back to the root. And that is the marriage and the love that we have for each other and this sacramental bond. And then, as you said, the communication piece is so important, and recognizing that we're different as male and female. So we will process and express differently. But we are also particular men and women. There's not like generic men, generic women, right? And like, there are some things that we can say about men and women. You know, women generally tend to maybe be a little bit more emotionally expressive, can sort of see things more globally. But not every woman is quite like that. Men are very direct. You know, that example of going shopping, like we go up and down the aisles, they go straight to what they need and they're out. But I will also say that, you know, my husband goes to Lowe's and like, I don't see him for 2 hours. Yep. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know,
just wondering.
So, you know, and we all bring our family of origin. Yes. And all of those things. So I would say to a couple, like, if you're feeling some conflict or you're kind of not communicating well in your marriage, don't be too hard on yourselves. Yep. Like, understand that there are all these layers and all this complexity to this circumstance of two unique and mysterious persons, you know, coming into a marriage together.
Yes, yes. And I'm thinking too, even to the practical side of things, like navigating this experience of infertility and the medical side of that. But for many couples who are experiencing that, that is something that they haven't ever navigated before until they have been exploring infertility and the causes and diagnoses that could be around that. And so all of the emotions and stress of that can be really hard to communicate as well. So yeah, having a lot of grace for yourself and for each other. Absolutely. Infertility can be an incredibly isolating experience. You mentioned that when you were chatting with Kimberly, that was the first time that you'd shared with another woman that this was your experience. And in Catholic circles, it can seem like, well, everyone but me is having kids, or everyone is hosting a baby shower, or they're talking about how many kids they hope to have, or the minivan that they have their eye on. Springs in the Desert does just a really beautiful job of creating community, both digitally, but also in person. Can you speak into the importance of community for women and couples experiencing infertility, but also the resources that Springs in the Desert offers in this area?
Yeah, the community piece is absolutely essential. And I think we didn't quite realize how important that was when we first began. We had a blog and, you know, we were writing these little resources, but that ability for women, I'll just speak to women specifically right now, for them to come together and just share with each other, to share their hearts, to share their experiences is essential. One of the things that we do, I mean, we do various virtual events. We do a Lenten series. We do in-person events. But one of the things that we do is a weekly prayer group for women. It's virtual. It's called the Women at the Well. And it's kind of a drop-in thing. Some women come a little bit consistently, some come, you know, once or twice. And we want to keep it sort of casual and no pressure. But, you know, if you're in a season where, oh gosh, this is a hard time and you need community, then, you know, then you can come. And so one of the things that has been so beautiful to see is that even a woman who comes for the very first time, very quickly, she sort of settles in because she doesn't need to explain anything. She might talk a little bit about her personal story and share her personal experience, but she doesn't have to explain the emotions or qualify something before she says it. You know, she doesn't have to say, I know this will sound terrible, but no, because there's already that understanding. And I think that is really important because it gives them a sense of belonging. And that's something that we hear over and over again, not just from women, but from couples, you know, together, that there's this sense, especially unfortunately in the Catholic space, that they don't feel like they belong. In fact, we had prayer group last night and one of the women said, you know, I wish that there was a way that the church could help us find each other. So that community piece is absolutely essential.
Just to be able to, like you said, walk into a conversation and feel your shoulders just sink. Yes. Down. I remember being in a season of infertility and just how many times I would say, oh, you know, and then progesterone and this is what it does and this is like hormone imbalance and this is what it looks like, and to have to just go through the nitty gritty before even getting to the bottom where it's like, I feel like I don't fit, but to have to explain so much to get to that part. And in conversations with women who don't know that experience, that can be a massive barrier to even wanting to dig into it because there's so much explanation.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say even within this community, there can be some of those barriers. I mean, you mentioned the experience of secondary infertility. We will have women come to this group and perhaps not reveal that they have a child, or reveal it in a very kind of shame-filled way, because they think, well, maybe I don't really belong here. Maybe this grief that I'm feeling isn't really grief. I don't have a right to it. And so even within our different experiences, this community, I think, is so important because it then calls forth the kind of generosity and understanding that each of us needs to grow into. And so it has become such a place of welcome. And, you know, that's all God's grace. This is His work. And I'm always just so amazed and thankful for what He is choosing to build through all of us.
Yes. Yes. You know, for some women, infertility can look like many different things. And for some women, infertility can carry with it that cyclical grief. There's this new cycle and there's this hope for maybe this time it's going to be a pregnancy. And then all of the tension that can sometimes come with timing intercourse. And then there's the weight that seems to last forever. And then it's another negative pregnancy test. How would you encourage a woman who feels like she's losing hope that there's going to ever be an end to that season of infertility, or if there will be an end to that season of infertility?
Yeah. And I mean, there's not an easy answer to that. You know, it's, as I said, it's so mysterious, and we don't know. We don't know the future, and we don't know how long this season will last and what shape our marriages will end up taking. The best answer that I can give is you only have to think about today. That is really hard. I understand that. But particularly with this cross, it's so easy for us to live in the past because we second guess, and if I would have done that, and why didn't I do this? And then it's really easy to project all the way in the future. When is it going to happen? Will it? What if it never does? I would encourage women to sort of practice and work on staying in the moment, in the present. You only have to worry about today and loving your husband today and finding the fruitfulness today or dealing with the side effects of the medication today. And I think that helps to kind of take some of that overwhelm away. It's not going to take it away completely. It's going to be hard, harder on some days than others. But I think we can just sort of give ourselves permission to take it one step at a time.
Yeah. I was reading on Springs of the Desert through the resources and blogs that you have posted, and reading an article that was just buy the pants and take the vacation. It's okay. Today they fit. They might not fit if you get pregnant. It's okay. They can be in your closet today though, because they fit today. Or you can make the plan for vacation right now because this is where you are. And I think it's simple, but it's so hard. It's so hard to zoom just into today when it's so easy to look and, well, 5 years from now, what's that going to look like? Yeah, that's just really challenging.
Yeah. And that's why the need for community, the need for counseling, if that will help you, the need for spiritual direction. I mean, you know, all the resources we have, all the tools in the toolkit, that will help us just day by day to keep moving forward.
You've mentioned a couple of times this idea of fruitfulness, and I think the idea of spiritual maternity can seem like a bit of a consolation prize for women experiencing infertility sometimes, or like it's the second rate motherhood. What work is Springs in the Desert doing to challenge that narrative? And what does it look like to live out spiritual maternity and fruitfulness in a season when you might just be longing for physical maternity?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, not an easy answer, because we can't simply take away that longing and that desire. And you know what else? We don't want to, because that's a beautiful part of who we are, right? But one of the things that we encourage women and couples together is to look for those ways that they are fruitful now. And those can be really simple things. Sometimes we think that they have to be these very grand gestures, but they can be really simple ways of generosity and support and friendship that we offer to others. And fruitfulness doesn't just come through children or through teaching Sunday school or babysitting. We can spiritually mother and uplift people who are older than us, our peers. So there are just so many ways, you know, our fruitfulness is not exhausted in that gift of children. But there, you know, and I think the first fruits of all of this comes in our marriage. Like, we need to give life to each other in our marriage. I think that's something that we often neglect, or we just don't think about that. And we have to be careful that it doesn't become a self-centered kind of thing. Like, okay, we're just going to pour ourselves into each other, right? But if we're not giving life to each other, then how can we have that sort of bloom out in the world? So that nurturing of the marriage is an important part of cultivating that fruitfulness.
Yeah, to your point, I have read so many things about the fruitfulness within a marriage, within as a couple externally, like as a couple together in the world, but I have not ever heard someone mention that fruitfulness exists within the way that we love our spouse in our family. So that, yes, to your point, that is a neglected topic.
Yeah, that's something we're really just, I think, trying to work through and think through now. I mean, you know, you asked about how we're sort of doing these things. How do we talk about spiritual motherhood or fruitfulness? I mean, that's sort of the exciting part, I think, of this ministry, is that we're kind of working through it now. And, you know, spiritual motherhood is also, I think, often thought of as, well, that's for nuns, or that's for, you know, the poor woman who could never find a husband, so now she has to be spiritually fruitful. And I think, you know, honestly, the church writes some beautiful things. This podcast is Letters to Women. We know that John Paul II has written so beautifully about the feminine genius, right? But I think, like, the church, our pastors, from the pulpit, in our religious education, I mean, we don't talk about it. I think this is a worthy thing to dialogue about and to work through. What does spiritual motherhood mean? I think it means a lot of things.
Yep. And there's just such a uniqueness in that. Like, we've been talking about that it's not just women and here's this generic box of women and they're all spiritual mothers. No, every single woman has a unique spiritual maternity that she lives out in her own way. And just having the freedom to explore that regardless of the season of life you find yourself in. Yes. Yeah. Yes. We've been talking a lot about different diagnoses, different infertility experiences. A lot of couples who experience infertility are facing diagnoses like PCOS or endometriosis or health concerns from a woman's perspective. But some couples start testing and looking for answers about their infertility and they do receive a diagnosis of male infertility. And I don't think that is talked about as much. Do you have any advice for couples in this situation? What does it look like for a wife to support her husband with a diagnosis about his fertility?
I think that is such an important question, because you're right, we so often focus on the woman, and because so much of the testing and treatment you know, applies to the woman, and we talk about how husbands can support their wives. And I think this is an area that is kind of neglected, of how we women can support and uplift our husbands. And, you know, that's something with our ministry that we are working to kind of shore up and do more with. But I think the biggest way that we can support our husbands is to understand and help them to understand that their identity is rooted in God, in their sonship in God, and that their identity, just as I mentioned that infertility is a circumstance, not my identity, it's the same for him. Like his identity, my husband's identity, is of this man that I fell in love with, who is a man of God, and is my husband, and is an amazing brother and friend, and all of these other aspects to who he is as a person. And I think, you know, we don't have to be worried about, you know, kind of conferring this masculinity on him, and we have to, you know, talk him up about what a big man he is. Like, no, that's not our job. Our job is to simply affirm him and confirm him in who he is. And again, this idea that we didn't marry an idea, we married this man. And so just, you know, talking about how we are carrying this cross together, and that he is the man that God brought into my life, and that I love him for who he is. And that's I think the best thing that we can do, to allow him to express in the way that he wants to not dictate how he has to talk about it, or that he should be grieving in a particular way, according to sort of our agenda or how we express our emotions, but to let him know that he has that freedom to really talk to you and express whatever he needs to express, in the way that he most needs to. It sounds kind of simple, like there should be, you know, much more that we do, that there should be these certain things that we say, but it's really quite simple. It's that love and presence.
Yes, yes, and creating that space for him to just exist as he is, as a human being who's unique and unrepeatable. Oh, yes, it's so true. And we are just scratching the surface of the resources that you provide through Springs in the Desert, but also prayer groups and so many different resources that are on your website. Where can listeners find out more about Springs in the Desert and connect with you after this episode is done to keep that conversation going?
Yeah, so the best thing is to start off at the website, springsinthedesert.org. Check out the blog. You can check out our podcast, the Springs in the Desert podcast. We have a ton of resources at the website. Please follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We also have a private Facebook group where you can connect a little bit more. Social media has become a great opportunity for us to minister too. And so, you know, we really encourage people to engage in that way. And then, you know, get in touch with us if you'd like to have a small group. Maybe you want to start something at your parish, or even, you know, just in your home. Maybe you want to invite some people over and do a small group. Contact us at info@springsinthedesert.org, and we will help you with that. And I also want to put in a plug for our spiritual father, Father Paul West. He is the spiritual father for our ministry. He's also a Byzantine Catholic priest. He is married. And he and his wife, Alyssa, have two children, but they have struggled with primary infertility. They had a loss, and now with secondary infertility. And so he, not that other priests can't minister in this way, right? But he is sort of uniquely placed to understand this cross. And so he does spiritual direction with people all over the country, and even some people overseas as well. So you can contact him, and you know, you can get to him through our website. And if you just want to talk, or if you would like to have some spiritual direction, he is available, and he is just an amazing resource. He's a really wonderful pastor.
That's incredible. I love the spiritual father of the ministry too. What a gift. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And yeah. I have just one last question for you to wrap up our conversation. I ask this to every woman who we host on the podcast, and it's this one: how do you live out the feminine genius in your ordinary daily life as a Catholic woman?
I have been thinking about this question, and I think, again, there's not a simple answer to that, because I feel like every day God is kind of showing me that and sort of pulling that out of me. Right now in this season, I feel like the way that my genius is coming, is being drawn forth, it's not me, it's the Lord drawing it forth, is through this ministry. And especially in those times that I am able to connect with women, whether it's in our prayer group or it's on a retreat, or even when they email with a prayer request and I can respond to them and just sort of enter into their space for a moment. This is something that I never expected, and not something that I ever thought that I could do. I have always thought, you know, I'm a pretty good friend, I'm a nice person. But I guess I never thought that I could have the capacity to open my heart in that way. And so that has been a surprise to me, and a way that I never anticipated something like the feminine genius would express itself in me, but I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, I imagine when women reach out to you with this experience of infertility and invite you into to sit with them in that you accompanying them and affirming them is a total gift. So thank you for this ministry and for coming on the podcast and sharing the story of how it came to be and all the beautiful work that you are doing. This has been lovely.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the great work and the ministry that you're doing through this podcast.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Letters to Women. Check out the show notes for my conversation with Anne online at my website, letterstowomenpodcast.com, or just scroll down in your podcast player for links to find more about Springs in the Desert, their podcast, blogs, online prayer groups, and community resources. You'll also find a link to the sponsor for today's episode, Rooted for Good. Something that I'm doing this season is including some discussion questions for you in the show notes as you explore in your own journaling and prayer time, or to foster good conversations with your friends or small groups. I think we learn about the feminine genius when we are in conversation with other women, and I know so many of you do use these episodes as conversation topics with your friends and with your small groups, so I'm happy to support you that way this season. You'll also find a link to sign up for my newsletter. That's Naptime Notes once a month. I just share about books I'm reading to myself and the kids, braggable thrift store finds, and the podcasts and playlists that we are listening to. Naptime Notes is always going to be free, but when you subscribe for $5 a month, you get early and ad-free access to all the Letters to Women podcast episodes days, sometimes weeks before they ever go live here in the public podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to Letters to Women wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a new episode. And if you know women in your life who would love this conversation with Anne, please send this episode their way and tell them what's coming up on the show. If you listen to the podcast and you love the conversations and the guests, please leave a rating and review. And you can always just send your thoughts and comments my way via email at letterstowomen@gmail.com. That's all I have for today's episode. Letters to Women is going to be back in your podcast feed in 2 weeks with a conversation with Erica Ty Campbell from Be a Heart about liturgical living. And I'm really excited to share that conversation with you. Until next time, be not afraid.